Hello, I'm Sagar Baroshi.
And I'm John Ingold.
Welcome to the Game Narrative Kaleidoscope podcast. Each week, we flip to a page of the Game Narrative Kaleidoscope book, and we interview one of the contributors about their chosen topic. This week, we have Anthony Jauneau. Welcome, Anthony.
Hi, everyone.
Anthony, we would love to hear a little bit more about you, to hear about what has brought you into the industry. Our podcast here is all about the craft of game writing and of narrative design, something that you are clearly very, very familiar with. So please give us a sense of yourself.
So first of all, thank you so much for having me. As you can tell by the way I pronounce the H in words, I'm French. I was born in on Réunion Island, which is a tropical island in the Indian Ocean, which is France, but very far from mainland France. I studied cinema and then scriptwriting in France, in Paris, for 5 years, and I really didn't want to write any French TV shows. So I discovered at the time, so we are talking about 2009, I discovered at the time that you could actually be a game writer, which is something that was kind of not really there at the time, I think. I worked at Ubisoft for 5 years on a very strange game / experience / application called Ozen, which is forgotten now, but it's a good thing. I was on my own for 5 years on that.
Okay.
Then I worked at Asobo on a couple of HoloLens projects, so alternate reality helmet. And I worked on the prototype for a Plague Tale before it became a Plague Tale.
Really?
Oh, right.
Yeah, that was a really, really long time ago. And I started basically the same week as Sébastien Renard, who's the narrative director there now and who has shaped the game. And after that, I worked for 18 months at Sumo Digital in Sheffield. I was a narrative designer on the second version of Dead Island 2, which is not the game that was released 2 years ago. But that's the way it is. Like, it was a very super exciting opportunity and super cool chance to get into AAA world and also meet a lot of British devs. That was super fun. And then since 2017, I've been working mostly with indie games, my own. So I re-released Nightcall in 2019, which is a visual novel / investigation game in a taxi in Paris. Flatai in 2021, if I'm not mistaken. COVID years are kind of weird. And since then, I started a narrative agency, which is basically what Sweet Baby or Tailspinners in the UK does, which is narrative services for games. We are smaller than Sweet Baby and Tailspinners, of course. It's basically just myself and a couple of freelancers, depending on the projects. And the last 6 years have been full of projects. We worked on more than 60 games.
Wow, no way.
Clients. Yeah, we did entire games. Sometimes we do just like 3 or 4 days on a game, just auditing, reviewing stuff. And yeah, it's been 6 years now.
And this is cool. A tremendous background.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a bit chaotic because the industry is not in a very good shape right now. But everything is a bit chaotic, but it's kind of fun as well to change or move from one project to the other. And yeah, and I think the latest game I worked on is Battlestar Galactica: Scattered Hopes, which is coming out, I don't know, soon. I don't think there is a date now. Where I was lead writer and I did the almost all of the writing, all the narrative writing in the game.
That's fantastic. I love when we get to talk to people who've got these incredibly varied and diverse portfolios, because I think the writers in the industry, that sometimes they end up very kind of in one place the whole time, and if they don't, they tend to end up absolutely everywhere the whole time. Yeah. And it's kind of it's just a wonderful perspective. However, we have a format, so I should probably try and stick to the format. So could you, your article for the game narrative book was pithily, called Silence. So could you please break your silence and outline what was the thesis of your article for the people who haven't necessarily read it?
So I would say that the main thesis is that we're not using silence enough in game narratives. And when I'm talking about silence here, I don't mean like how the character is mute or like we have in some games, but really the option to choose silence as a way to either to deflect something because you don't want to answer, or as a way to add a lot more emotion to the actual dialogue. It came like the idea of trying to work really hard on silence is it's basically coming from a video from someone that I don't know if you've heard of that person, but John Ingold, of course. you have the I don't remember the name, of course, but you have the deflect.
Accept, reject, deflect structure.
Deflect, And I saw that video and I was like I saw the talk, sorry, and I was like, this is great, this is fantastic, but it means that I have to find three sentences every time. That's gonna be tough in some situations. And a couple of games did that in the past. It's not like a novel thing that I'm inventing. I think for me the best example is Oxenfree, which has a constant option to remain silent throughout the whole game. And that's when I played the game, I was just like, this is incredible. This is such a wonderful piece of design that says a lot about who can be the character and the different, like the agency that we're giving to players. And it's funny because I was listening to some of the previous episodes, and I think that it's Mary Kinney who says that the player is the co-author. And I think that especially when you do visual novels, which is something that I worked, it's a genre I worked a lot on. In visual novels, you want to give agency that doesn't force you to write an entire new branch. And silence is such a powerful way, because it in a way it forces the other character to react in kind of a violent, with quotes, air quotes, way, because we don't really do silence in the actual world. If someone asks us a question and we keep silent, it's kind of rude, could be offensive, it could be seen as the silence in itself can mean I don't know, or I don't want to answer, or I'm really annoyed. So it has a lot of
could be judgment. Meanings. Yeah.
Yes. And especially like when I was working on Night Call, so we have almost 100 characters in the game. We have 300 scenes. It's like the scope is not good. It's a very bad scope. Never do that again.
100 characters in this game? I didn't realize.
Yes, 99 technically, but we have a lot of scenes, and I had to almost every character has like one main, like a big story that is can be cut into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 scenes. And at one point, I was really thinking about what happens when you get into a cab, and sometimes you don't want to talk, and sometimes the best way to tell the driver I don't want to talk is just not to answer. And I think that the cab driver could do the same. So we really like this idea of having a silent option at all time. We couldn't do it for a lot of reasons, but most of the time you can just stay silent, and some characters will keep talking. Some characters will get that as a signal that they have to shut up. Some characters will get offended, and so on and so on. And it opened very like I don't remember, is it in English again? I think it's probably stay silent in
it says say nothing in
say nothing call. Yeah, say nothing, yeah. Which say nothing or just an ellipsis is probably the cheapest way to get a lot of agency into a game without having to write new branches, new path, and so on and so on. So that was really like the for me like a I don't know. It's suddenly discovering a new color. If I were a painter, suddenly like, oh no, I can use yellow as well. It's amazing. And I think that nowadays a lot of games especially AAA games it's really difficult for them to shut up for a lot of reasons. We have to make sure players get to the right point, do the right thing. We have to remember, we have to remind them about the objectives and the goals and the enemies and so on. So it's a lot of, it's a lot of information, and I think characters talk too much, and I would love a AAA game where I could just not answer someone at one point. That would be quite amazing, yeah.
So I loved your article, and I love the thesis of it. And just listening to you talk about it now, I've written down like about 25 questions. I'll see how many we get through. But I think
you go first, John, yes.
Thank you. The one, it's my podcast, and I will go first. I'm joking. It's our podcast. The thing that was at the top of my head from what you were saying is, you know, about this idea that you can't put silence into a AAA game because we. And I think that's really interesting. Why can't we do that? And it's something to do with being confident that the player is engaged, right? We have to constantly be saying, here's your button. Here's what you can do. You're the hero. You're in charge. And like that, to me, drills into one aspect of using silence, which is you've got to be so confident to use that as a writer, right? You've got to be confident that the player gets what you're trying to do. You've got to be confident that the player sees silence as an expressive option rather than a simply I'm not interested button. And you've got to be confident that the rest of the game can carry the emotion and the information for you. And like does that make it hard to use it because you have to kind of really build that confidence? Or is it that once you do it, it kind of gives you something back? Like, because that's quite exciting to me.
Yeah, for me, it's really about giving back. I think it's one of the points in my article. It's up to the. It's like for me as a player, the option to stay silent is I don't want to decide. I don't want to choose. I want to let the other character or characters make the choice for me in a way, or make the right
set
decision.
The rhythm of the the conversation almost.
Which is something that you need. I think you need a specific. It would be weird if Aloy from Horizon would stay silent because that's not who she is, basically. But I think there is a lot of other games or even RPGs where I would love to be just to be quiet. But yeah, really for me, it's giving control to the character, and as a writer, it's so refreshing, so liberating to be like. Oh, maybe that person who seems very nice will suddenly really dislike the fact that you're not responding to them, and they would get angry or annoyed at you because you are not responding, even if it was a rhetorical question. As a writer, it's amazing when your character is, I don't know, strong enough in your head or strong enough on the tip of your fingers. So suddenly it's like, oh, I know exactly how they will react. And it's like exciting.
I mean, I often think when I'm writing a conversation about it as a kind of a raising of the stakes, it's like a poker game or something between your characters. And silence is wonderful because it feels like you're not raising the stakes. But of course, it can be incredibly passive aggressive and really
unnerving.
Push people.
Really unnerving. I mean, you just think in such a deep way about this, Anthony, and like I first just enjoy that, right? Like I enjoy hearing the ways that we can use it, and I think you'd probably be hard pressed to find another games writer who wouldn't agree in principle. But I think the reason we don't see it as often as possible, or I'm curious at least in delving into this question into why it is that we don't see it so often. So, Oxenfree, right? It's like so influential. The first Oxenfree came out 10 years ago.
I know.
10 years ago. 10 years ago. And yet it's not the most common option. And I think actually in your article, you put your finger on the reason for it. And you make this point that a silent option often represents information that you will not discover. So if you don't press the other, your conversant, you won't learn about them, about something. And if you pick the silent option, you're sort of assuming I'm going to miss a branch of the dialogue tree. And it's definitely, at least for me as a player, and I think for a number of players, that is the reason I do these conversations. I don't do them as real conversations. I do them as weird little exploratory, as encyclopedic explorations, which of course is not role-playing. That's like me being conscious I'm playing a game. And maybe, as a writer, we both kind of want our players to pour through every nook and cranny of our world, but we also kind of want them to role-play. And it strikes me that maybe these two things go in contrast to each other. What do you think?
Yeah, what I mentioned in my article is what I call the panopticon nature of video games. I think it's very important for me that when you do, especially for 3D games, the fact that you are the fact that you can't go everywhere is an issue. Like, people will hate it. And I think that most players are a bit like cats. They are going to go in everywhere. They're gonna go on every piece of furniture. They will go under every couch. They want to scan the entire area before they make one single decision and if they like or not the place. And silence is basically saying, I'm not interested, or I don't want to know. I mean, it could mean that. And one thing that we're trying to do as much as possible now in games, when we join teams and we have the opportunity to do narrative designs as well, is really to always have one choice, which is going to be, I want to know more, which is please talk more. I want you to listen to you more. And then try to have one option, which is, no, I don't want to talk. And I think those two, it's very, those two very different energies are kind of missing from a lot of narrative games where there is one path, one character, one path, and I'm not allowed to, even if I have choices, they are...
To deviate, really.
Yeah.
But how do we...
Answered your question. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
How do we train players to be okay with this? Because, in our most recent game... TR49, there's a radio button, and the idea is your character won't speak unless you press this button, which pops up every now and then. And some players, they're not interested, they just want to do the puzzle, they never press the button, and that's fine, and the game is designed to work that way. And some players get what we're trying to do and press the button when they feel like it's a good moment, but I think that's the minority. And then some players press the button every time it appears because there's a button there and they have to press it. And then they say, this game talks too much. And I don't know. I feel like I'm constantly banging into this problem. How do we train players to this idea that it's okay to play the narrative content, as Sargar says, in character, or to play what feels good in this scene, as opposed to, I have a box of information that I have to read all of. I'm going to read all of it. How on earth do we get players to understand that? Because I feel like that's a core problem here.
Okay, so I think the podcast is not long enough for
this is a great topic. Yeah.
So for me, there are two things right now I can see. Is the first one is, I think I use the word gimmick. I don't think that the silence in Oxenfree is a gimmick. Because it's there all the time, and it says something very important about the character and the world, and the game can actually function perfectly without any other input than silence, which I think is it's incredible to write a conversation where you can interrupt people. I don't know, there is something about but this game in particular, I think there is something a bit magical about it. So if the narrative side of the game is a gimmick, if it's not introduced in the right way, I don't think it's going to work. And for me, it's all about immersion now. It's I really want, my dream is that every game starts with the same intro as Firewatch. I know this intro is far from perfect and it doesn't have any connection with the rest of the game, but the fact that you are starting with extremely low stakes, it's just a slice of your life before the actual game starts. I don't think it has any effect with the rest of the game, but after 5 minutes of answering questions, I'm suddenly more into the character, who is not very defined character. And I think that most games should have more immersion, but it takes time. I think, and especially if you do a AAA game, I don't think you want to start with 25 minutes of your character doing the groceries or something like that. But yeah.
Well, I mean, they often start with an hour of character creation in RPGs, yeah. Don't they? Which is just choosing like what shape are your lips. So I'm not sure it's that bad an idea actually.
But they should talk at the same time every time.
Right? Yeah.
That
yeah,
would
yeah.
be interesting. Why couldn't that be a thing?
They do that in Fallout 4. When you create your character, your wife is right behind you, and the husband is behind, and they have like little.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's good.
Quips. They are just like talking about, oh, it looks good on you, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's Fallout 4, and after that, it's like you chase ghouls in the wasteland. But yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because the game itself then doesn't want to support that. You've just said something here, Anthony, that I think might be quite right. Like, I agree. I actually quite love the start of Firewatch as well for many of the same reasons. But maybe the thing about Oxenfree that makes it work is specifically that it is so consistent. Maybe it's that consistency, right? Like what the reason players feel that they cannot do the full role play or they cannot pick the maybe risky option is because they don't know if this is a one-off opportunity that they're about to miss. But if they were to be communicated that like it's always available, it will always still be interesting, then it has the equal weight of any other dialogue choice might, right?
It's like it's like a feature as soon as you give it to players and it's explained in a certain way. I think players will be comfortable with it and using it or not using it, and then you have to make sure you can your whole game will support the
financial. Will work with that.
Which is daunting, especially when you on bigger games when you can't really be that I don't know, it's kind of hard to refresh a lot of narrative features in big games because there's so much expectation
from the players,
and you just don't know at first maybe where the fun is, so to speak, in one of these big games, right?
So I think Oxenfree works in a slightly different way, or it did for in my head when I was playing it, that I felt like there's a big, because their silence is more like a timeout, isn't it? It's like you run out of time and the conversation moves on.
Yeah.
And that's quite different than a choice, an explicit pick this, or pick nothing, because that feels like I'm deliberately not choosing the other things. Whereas I think Oxenfree sometimes has that feeling that I could speak now, or I could hold back to see if I get a better opportunity to speak in the future. So it's kind of, I'm sort of hedging my bets, not on not saying anything, but when's the right moment to jump in?
Yeah.
And I think it does that more in some scenes of the game than in other scenes of the game. But I thought that was amazing. Like, I really like that.
You're right. It works especially well because every reply is timed. So you have a timer before the conversation keeps on with or without you, and it's up to you to decide if you're part of the conversation or if you're not. And I think it creates like a very different mood to the entire game because you have to listen and read everything. You have to listen and read to everything.
I love it in the context of what you were talking about with Nightcall, I think, where you sort of, if you don't respond, how does that force the character to kind of escalate and develop? So you know, someone might just start getting bigger and bigger and bigger to try and get a response out of you, and then as a player you're like, oh, this is brilliant. If I don't do anything, how long can I not do anything before this guy pops? That's really fun.
They are probably like a third of the characters in Nightcall where you can just skip the main story, the main narrative bit of the scene if you just don't listen. And there is another thing, I think, it's not in the article, I think I cut it for length reasons. But sometimes silence is used in one thing in our real world. It's to convey the fact that you're listening really, really hard to someone and you don't want to interrupt. And or there is a respect that you know, you're kind of respecting the other person to finish the whole thing before you can say something. And it's also very powerful. It's really hard to do because you're not saying why you stay silent. You just stay in silence. And it's kind of hard to, it was kind of hard to pull in the game. I don't think we did it often, but
one of my questions as well was, given that there are so many different kinds of silence, how do you make it clear to the player which one they're choosing, because there's, I mean, how
So again, I have to talk about that famous talk you gave. I think it's, I'm sorry to. there is one very important thing is that if you give two choices to a player, they will make a decision. But if you give them three or four options, it's suddenly a completely different story. And the silence is also a very cheap way to give another option, which often was really coming instinctively through the writing. I was writing the, what I was doing most of the time is writing the actual, like the best quote scene, and then using options to either try to cancel the conversation or try to move to other areas or like or ask more questions. But you know, the idea, the for me, the choice in Nightcall especially, the choices are really about, I don't want you to get to the point right now, I just want to, you know, I want to go
to flow.
A different path. Yeah. And it really comes down to the actual writing. For me, it's really up to, I had an idea, a character, and the main question we had for all our characters was, do they want to say the story that they have in them? And I think that when we work on visual novels especially, and most narrative games, this is a really good question to ask yourself. Is that character okay to talk? Like, do they want to talk? Do they want to express things? Yeah. Do they want to? And it gives the characters in your head or in your story so much agency by themselves, then it's a pleasure as a writer to get back to them and be like, oh no, this is not the right moment, or this is not the right time. They wouldn't actually say the things that we need them to say, so how can we get to the actual information? But yeah, I think the key elements for me in game writing is the game part. It's like it has to be fun to write the actual game. It has to be a challenge, but also like a pleasure to wake up and open the spreadsheet and write 500 lines. You know, it's. Yeah. I think there is something in writing in general, but especially game writing, where if I believe that if I had fun writing the characters and the scene, players will also have fun.
I love that.
I feel like this conversation is, it's just reminding me how incredibly simulationist we really are in how we do conversations in games, like how far removed it is from the true complexity of human interaction. But of course it is, right? Like what an obvious statement to make. But I do remember a couple indie teams that were like, well, could we push this a bit farther? Is there a way of sort of capturing some of these details of interaction? There was a game called Dialogue, a writer's story, I believe, that really tried to put a lot, it was made here in London, it was a lot of little mechanics in like both QTE-based things, like how long you wait, trying to allow you to detect how the other person might be feeling so that you can decide your choice accordingly. And I think they tried a lot of different things. They tried like color as a way of determining emotion, perhaps, or I guess that's not that far from an emotion wheel, but it wasn't only that. You would mix that with the actual text of what you were saying. Or take in silence. This question had just come up in our chat of like, well, how do you convey what type of silence? Well, maybe you just tell the player. If it's a dialogue choice, maybe we just use a tagging system or something. Like that can feel really maybe lame or overly engineering focused. But it strikes me that like because of the inherent distance that we have with the player, maybe we do need to unveil the workings of the game a bit more to let them decide how they want to go through that scene and to give them, of course, interesting things to write through.
I love that idea. I think it's really, it's one of the, it's central to games. It's the freedom, the fact that you can choose to never leave Link's home at the beginning of time. Yeah. And it's not a game. You don't have fun, but you can stay in the house and just turn around. You know, I think that it's a. You made a really good point. I think generally in every kind of writing, whether it's for smaller games or big games, is we have to give more tools for players to express themselves in dialogues, especially because it's a topic that I really care about. But generally in generally in the entire game. Like, it's something that I've never seen, but I think could be fun. It's I wish I could have, every time I talk to a merchant, I have like four different dialogue options, yeah. And depending on the tone I use, some merchants will like me, some merchants will be annoyed. And then the prices are a bit higher, but it's not a big thing. You know, it's not like it changed the entire thing. But I think these are the kind of little fun games that you could have. The issue, of course, is when you apply that to a 2-hour, 5-hour long experience, it's kind of fine. But if you do an entire Assassin's Creed where every time you go to a merchant or The Witcher, every time you go to a merchant, you have to explain something or you have to fight the merchant to get it. It wouldn't be sustainable in the long run. It's really about, I think, the kind of experience you're trying to achieve. I had something. You said something about recreating the complexity of conversations. I think that this is really the. For me, there is something interesting in the silence. I think we have a couple of characters in Nightcall, but we did that in another game. I can't remember now. It's depending on the. I had like depending on the choices. At one point, we had specific lines where, like, oh, but you don't listen to me. Actually, like, I know you've not been listening to me for the past 3 hours, and it's not very nice. But I think it's the kind of, I mean, games are absolutely amazing for that. You really like a character, and then the game is kind of making fun of you for giving them a lot of gifts, or you know, trying to be nice with them. It's like, hey, you need to share. You have other
yes.
characters. I don't know. There are so many fun things you could do, and it's kind of sad that we don't have that space in bigger productions, I think.
I'm just completely distracted by this idea of merchants that you have to haggle with the whole time, because it just makes me think when I go to the shops in real life, like 90% of the time these days, it's one of those machines where you don't talk to anyone. You just scan it and you take your bananas or whatever, which is like a shop in Assassin's Creed, right? I want my health pack. I get my health pack. I'm gone. But every now and then, if I go for something bigger and more interesting, actually, yeah, that's a great opportunity for that. Right. I want to upgrade my sword with the fancy pants thing that only this one guy can do. But the guy is just really prickly or really easily offended. Yeah. And if I get it wrong, then I get it wrong. But I guess players just, they have such a strong sense that they ought to be able to get the best outcome from a situation.
Yes. You're right.
Yeah. Like, there's this entitlement.
It should be an entire game around that idea, I think. Like, otherwise...
Right, so it feels fair.
Yes, otherwise it's like you do a lot of things and every 5 hours you have to convince someone to repair the shield. Like,
what? I'm an assassin. I suddenly have to be a nice guy? What?
Yeah, both of these things. But I mean, people have tried this because it's such a common part of games, right? That we see game makers make this attempt. I'm reminded of Oblivion's conversation mechanic, where they basically were like, let's see every conversation as a little mini duel. And I played that game for so many hours, and I never, ever once understood what I was supposed to do to, like, win a persuasion thing with one of these. Never. There were all these wedges that were moving around on the screen. But, like, at least they tried. They had the same thought, right? They were like, how can we make each conversation potentially have an unexpected outcome? I feel like I applaud that.
I think that now in most games, it's simply you have plus 10% in, you know, when you sell your wares, it's 10% more expensive, and that's it. But it doesn't really appear in the actual dialogue. But yeah. I don't know. It would be fun to do.
I think it's an uncracked problem, right? It's like, well, what's the right balance? But the thing you keep saying that I think is exactly right. I feel so often we try to come up with a universal answer that's going to work across our medium. But you're right. It depends so much on the length of the game, on the scope of the game, on the types of things you're going to do with the game. I do want a character who I meet as, like, before I've been given my sort of assassin's shroud, to treat me differently than they might 26 hours into the game when I am a legend, right? Like, you know, you would expect people to sort of behave differently.
This is the conversation you had with John Shear? And I'm not sure about the last name.
With Josh Shear.
Yeah.
Which is, at one point you need the game to answer to your own progression and how you're comfortable with it. And when it's a small game, it's kind of easy to do. But if, I mean, if you're on a big project, it's suddenly so much work to think about what's going to happen in 25 or 50 hours. Like it's kind
of, and to choose what you say, or else you're just going to be the hero of Kvatch for the whole thing, and that was your like tutorial mission or something, right?
Yeah.
There is a point you said in the article that I'd love to pick up on, and that is that you have a section where you were like, a value of silence that we haven't talked about here isn't just in conversations, but also just as a player choice for reflection or for a moment to sort of pause. And I really think that that's quite powerful. I think of sort of don't nod games, which very often try to prioritize this. Like in Life is Strange, you always have these like calm moments where you can sort of sit and take it in. In Jusson, you had a similar situation where the sort of you really is very meditative. Is that something that you kind of need to have a 3D game to have space for? Like, is there kind of no point in a game that's a bit more 2D or a bit more menu based, perhaps? Like, so, would you have done something like that in Nightcall? Yeah.
No, no, because the one of the difficulties with Nightcall is that the actual psyche mind of the cab driver is something that is locked, and you see it only when you reach the ending and you understand what is really happening in his head. So you're not. I have a kink for writing games where you're not really playing the main character. I think it's so good. It's so interesting when there is that little distance between the player and the main character, and that distance is interesting because you can hide things in it. You could call it unreliable player. I don't know, player character. I don't know how you say that. But there is this idea that it's not that they lied, but it's more that you don't see some stuff, or you have a specific angle to the character that you can't really see from. You don't really see how the characters see them, for example. And this idea of reflection, it's something that I So if I were in charge of working for a big AAA game and had a lot of time and money, I would love to have a feature which is basically you press a button and you have the main character like thinking out loud what they have in their minds, what they need to do, something like that. Like, because you can do that for pretty much everything else related to lore. Now you have a lot of games where you can press a button or you can see that's the empire of the thing, and you have like five paragraphs and it's like, oh, I understand the geopolitical complexities of Final Fantasy 16. But you can't it's very hard for players to be able to do something that will just have the main character say, oh no, I feel really bad about what I'm doing. It's terrible, you know. And this idea of again giving another tool for players to express themselves—it's super, super strong. And for me, silence is also a way for the player to just say, "I don't know what to do," and I will let the actual character manage for themselves.
Here's something I really want to do based on that. My daughter is a huge fan of a TV program, a kids' TV program about a dance school, but it's filmed like a reality TV show. So they do their dancing and they have their scenes, and every now and then it'll cut to one of them in effectively a diary room talking straight to camera, and they'll say something that explains what they were feeling in the scene. So they'll be like, oh, I'm just so angry with him. And then they'll cut back to the drama, or like, I just couldn't, when she walked in, I just couldn't believe what she was wearing. And it's amazing because it means you know, in case you can't follow the plot, they just tell you, this is what I'm feeling.
Yes.
But imagine if you had a button in the game which would cut to a diary room of the character going, I just couldn't believe she said that to me that moment. That would be so good. And you could do it any time. It's a brilliant idea.
But this is fabulous. This is a fabulous idea. It's not even just in, like, that's actually and that format is really good for, say, children, where it's quite helpful to sort of help contextualize things with someone else's commentary where you might not know what to think. You see this in other reality shows like Terrace House, where you'll have a panel of commentators on the main events of the reality show. And it's just very effective.
In case you don't understand what's going on, here's what we think is going on. And you go,
and they'll say it in a funny and witty and interesting way. And they'll go on.
So there is an I really like that. And for me, it's something that we kind of are not using from the famous Greek chorus role that they had in place at the time.
That's right.
Yeah. I think that most games should have like a group of NPCs appearing like in the UI over the game and being like, It was a very bad choice.
I love it. And they should sing. They should sing, "You fucked that right up." Like, that would be so good.
I'm so pleased that the three of us have agreed that Clippy is the real future of
this. This is exactly what we require.
Yes. But you know, actually, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you a game that has done this, I think, relatively successfully for me. And it's like my favorite game of the last 20 years that I'm not even sure the studio that made this thinks it's their favorite game. But that is Transistor, second game done by Supergiant. Yeah. I adore Transistor. I think it's so good and so efficient. And so sparing with this time. And maybe my favorite feature in it was something that I know they just kind of did as a throwaway feature because I've like watched the documentary about this. And that is, it's a very musical game. And you play a singer. And the music, of course, is wonderful. It's a Supergiant game. But at any given point, you can press a button and hold that button. And everything fades away. And you can't quite hear Red's thoughts. But you can hear her singing along with the music. And although I know the music is based on the level and maybe what's happening, I always tend to feel like I've gotten a little bit of insight into her psychology in that exact moment. You know, that's how I felt when I played through it.
It's a really, really good example. I think that silence is just another way to have your camera pointed at you, the main character, for a moment. And I think this is something we don't do enough in general. It's interesting you talk about this idea of having a cutaway joke or those characters talking or anything. Yeah, this is the thing that we don't do. I mean, a lot of the time people are saying that games are just like movies and so on, but we actually barely use movies' main tool, which is editing. We really don't do it because it's super hard for us, I think, to be constantly changing rooms and places and so on. There are a few games, The Last Stop and their previous game, Virginia, I think, had a lot of in-world editing.
Really abrupt cuts.
Yeah. And the first 25 minutes, you're just like, what is going on? This is nightmarish. Yeah. And then after a while, you understand the language. And this is something, I know that in Cyberpunk, the first hour, you have a big sequence where you move from places and different locations and so on. And editing is such a powerful, it's like the main difference between movies and, I mean, movies, TVs, and the rest of the other arts is like the idea of we could cut, rearrange stuff parts in different orders. It's kind of, it's kind of super powerful. And we don't do it enough. So, that's kind of sad.
Oh, I really like that. And I especially want to see more games that play with the timeline. So, like, I'll play a little bit from here and then a little bit earlier and then a little bit later and kind of piece that together. But it's all about that distance between the protagonist and the player that you were mentioning before. That seems like it's still a very uncomfortable idea that you're not supposed to just be that person, but rather kind of in some sort of communication with that person or some kind of control. But I think that's really interesting.
We did that in Flatteye. You have one of the... I'm trying to get one big challenge as a writer on every game, because as you know, it's very easy to make a game, so why not add something else? But the thing that we really wanted to do for Flatteye was the thing that I really, really cared about in Flatteye was I want to have a secondary point of view, which is a character that is on the sides of the narration, sees everything, knows everything. And you have this very powerful AI, which is like she's kind of trying to, like, her goal is to find the best possible outcome for humanity. So she guides you through different technological discoveries until you find like the right one. Mm-hmm. But she also comments on other stories, and she pops. Sometimes she appears in one dialogue, and she says, "No, she's lying." You know, she's giving you information like that. And I was adamant of, I need to do that because it's such a powerful tool to have a character that knows everything but decides not to tell you everything. I don't know. It was super cool. And she's a very vocal character, but she stays silent for a long period of time sometimes, because for cost reasons, of course, but also because she doesn't want to force your hand too much. And that was kind of important for me to have this kind of, benevolent narrator, that's kind of trying to not change too much your story. I don't know.
I guess it also gives it more impact if you use it judiciously rather than if you put it absolutely everywhere and it becomes slow. Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, but this we do have, right? I mean, we do have particularly say like in detective games, it's quite common to use the Watson and Holmes dynamic, where you will have a companion that is maybe smarter than you or more knowledgeable than you, but they don't want to give it all away. They want to test you, perhaps, so they want to see where you're going, and that can go all the way down. You know, you mentioned Ocarina of Time. It could even go all the way down to Navi and to like the various things that they know where they choose to interject. So I suppose we do have this, right? But very often those are characters in the world with you. It's rare that they are narrators. There is a game I played that I'm quite into recently, also a visual novel called Paranormasite.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And it sets things up in a theatrical way. There's a story you're going to remember that, and the narrator is both unreliable, but also playful and funny, and interjects when you least expect it. I mean, it's a very good
time. And I think John should play it, because there is a timeline component. You play different scenes, but they are not happening at the same time, or sometimes they're happening at the same time. So.
Right, and so by placing the narrator outside of the narrative, that gives them the freedom to mess around with kind of how they tell the story.
And they do it maliciously sometimes, right? Like they're like, oh, well, you thought that you knew everything. Like here's this other, here's this moment. When did you think that happened? You know, like, and they've just released another game in that style, actually.
I haven't played it yet, but I'm very excited.
Very impressive. Very impressive title. I think mysteries work well for this, because that is you sort of expect this a bit for a mystery. Like in the Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 game that the Chinese Room did, we jumped around time a ton. Well, I mean, I didn't really have any hand in writing it, I suppose. But they jumped around a lot across multiple significant periods of time, some of which are close together, some of which are in the past, because it's part of obscuring information that is part and parcel of a mystery story, right? That like you're sort of working on little pieces until everything happens and you can look back and say, oh, I see now, like these fit together. Mm. So...
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite common to do that, I think, in mystery games when you're the detective looking at the evidence that's been left behind. So there's this kind of whole raft of mystery games that are really archaeology games, and TR-49 is like that, but where you're just sort of digging through a suitcase of material, her story, and you don't necessarily know the order that things fit together in. But it's not as satisfying, it's quite a different beast than being that character and not knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really interesting. Well, look,
silence.
It's been such a great conversation. Silence. Yes, let's end on silence.
Cut the episode.
I know, it's a deep, profound, thoughtful silence. It's a different kind of silence that we've achieved. Right. So we should be.
Our listeners
will color
can definitely detect it.
Or something like that.
They can detect that we are being very profound at this moment.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Everyone's just here. It's an audio podcast, but we're all stroking our chins. We're all stroking our beards.
We should have three bearded guys. We should have a 15-minute long silence at the end of the podcast, and then we talk for 5 minutes, you know, just like the secret.
Yeah, just so we know that if a listener turned it off, they'll have missed the key bit of lore that they could have had, and they only listened to it.
Exactly. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for contributing to the book. And we'll wrap up our conversation there. But to listeners, please join us again next week when we'll be opening the book to another article and interviewing another great game writer about their craft. So thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.